This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. It's going to be a great show again, as usual. Have one of my special friends on today, and when we talk about journalism and research work, this guy is at the very top because his research work is unbelievable. He looks into every aspect of the story that he's going to have in the paper, and he's been around for a long time and kind of looks at it a little bit. He's wearing some really goofy shoes this morning, but Mike Vinson, good to have you on this morning.
Thank you, Truman, for the introduction. It was stellar.
Now, where in the world did you were telling me earlier where you got those shoes?
Our former sheriff in Warren County, Kenny Taylor, He was at Gondola Restaurant one day, and he had them on. I thought they looked so comfortable, and I commented as such, and he asked me a few days later, he says, "What size do you wear, Mike?" And I told him. Then yet a couple weeks later, yet again at Gondola, he come in, he had like a bag, hand them to me. He says, "The price tag's still on them. That's in the event that they don't fit." And so I said, "We'll find out right now." And so I put them on, and I've been wearing them ever since. That's been about 2.5 months ago. They're sort of a cross between a rough deck shoe and a house shoe, but they are indeed comfortable.
Is there a name for them?
They're called Sonors. Sonors. S-A-N-O-R, that's the brand.
So is that a type of shoe that you can find sitting under a bridge somewhere? It's been under there for 5 or 6 months, and it's aged a little bit, and that makes the value go up?
Well, you know what? I couldn't denounce that as a possibility because anything's possible.
You have had some of the best stories on in the Murfreesboro Post. Of course, you've written for a number of newspapers. You've been around a long time. And it's really amazing to me that we have a local paper here in Murfreesboro that has so many great journalists. Of course, I have a lot of respect for Ron Fryer, but he's amazing how he finds talent like you.
Ron, I'll tell you, I admit that I'm a bit biased because Ron's a dear friend. But I think anyone who is unbiased and objective and of sound mind will agree that Ron Fryer probably is as capable a media person as there is in Middle Tennessee, for sure, maybe all of Tennessee. Ron really, he understands the working principle of the collective apparatus.
And so informed about all aspects of the business.
He can talk on a litany of subjects and not go wrong.
Now, you have a litany of subjects, and of course, we have talked about a number of things from the Kennedy assassination to Martin Luther King's assassination, and things that really bring back a lot of emotions and memories in everybody about the occurrence. And there is one that you wrote just recently that really gets to me because he was one of my heroes when I was growing up. Of course, he was not in his youth at that time, I should say. He had pretty much all that had passed on. But what he did in the Olympics, and I'm trying to compare it a little bit to the Olympics today, right? Because I'm just so drawn to it. Because one of those things, if you're an American, you're going to be looking at the people who are representing you,
right,
and pulling for them, and it becomes not only a pride thing, but also an emotional thing, and you live and die with them. When they win, they're up there in the highest level, and when they lose, it's just total depression. And it's kind of like watching life as people go through life. It does image and mirror that. But Jim Thorpe was a story in himself, just all by himself.
It's iconic. It's almost biblical in a sense. I was thinking about this coming down here. He reminds me, in a way, of the biblical tale of Samson. Maybe not heard of that catastrophic. But he, and I'm sort of like you, Truman, how I came to know about Jim Thorpe was probably, I started getting really interested in sports when I was about 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been about 1965, and I just started consuming everything I could, you know, literature-wise, Sports Illustrated, encyclopedias. Of course, we didn't have the internet back then, and I came across Jim Thorpe and studied up on him. And then to really enhance that, I was able to watch the movie Jim Thorpe All-American, starring Burt Lancaster.
Great movie.
Which was released in 1951, which would have been 3 years before Thorpe passed away.
I saw the movie at the theater.
I didn't see it at the theater, but I remember seeing it on, I think it was Saturday night at the movies, when that first came on television.
Wow.
It was the first, because our family, remember, they started Saturday night in the movies, and they had other nights, but the original one was Saturday night at the movies, and it was like going to the theaters, except you stayed in your, you know, in your den of your home, and we would all gather, and the ladies would cook, neighbors would come over, neighbors who maybe didn't have a television. I remember seeing Jim Thorpe All-American probably about 1965.
Now, you take a man of Indian descent back then. And there were prejudices that were going on back then, just like there are prejudices now, and maybe even at a worse level at that time, because they were not considered equal in a number of respects. But he came in on the scene and just blew everybody away.
Well, his athletic prowess just... It was too much to contain, even those who had strong biases. There's not much you can do with something that monumental. He was so far ahead of his time athletically. You know, you and I were talking about this earlier. In the 1912 Olympics, as this, he'd already starred at Carlisle, All-American 1911. And he had led them to score all the points in an 18-15 victory over then collegiate powerhouse Yale. And they would go on to be national champions in 1912. And you got to watch this because the Olympics came before the football season.
Right.
But he, some of his, he won the pentathlon, both the pentathlon and the decathlon. And back then, the pentathlon was just a trimmed down version of the decathlon.
Mm-hmm.
5 track and field events, decathlon, 10 track and field events, and they no longer have that pentathlon as was. But he, in the decathlon, and I looked that up this morning before I came down here, he finished number one in 4 of the 10 events, and in the remaining 6, he finished no lower than 5th and up to number 2. But his best now, and I took special note of this, his best in the long jump was 23.5, and the world record back then was only a little over 24 feet. He had a high jump best of 6.5, and the world record was just like 6.5 and a half, just a touch under 6.6. So we have to figure that had he really focused on events such as that, he could have held a world record, world records, as you mentioned before we started the show, and possibly 2, maybe 3 track and field events. And he also won the 1,500 meters, which was part of the decathlon, which shows you not only did he have this explosive power, he had great stamina too.
Usually now, by the time you get to the 1,500 meters, you have enough of a lead that you can pretty much coast in that 1,500. And you know, when you're athletes that are like the ones that are in the decathlon, You have power events, and you have skill events, and you have the running events, but the long runs are the ones that usually get most of them, because by the time they get to that, look how much energy they've
You know what it shows? Bruce Jenner finishing up in the 76 Olympics, you can tell he is spent in that 1,500 meters, you know, when he knows he's won and he's just, it's over with. And I think you're right that that probably is a very trying event for him.
Well, you take a man that really hasn't trained as hard as he could have if he had started earlier, like a lot of them. But can you imagine what he would have done if he had the training that's available today in those events, and or if he had even just specialized in some of his events?
Right, and, you know, going back to it, and again, this is, I don't want to come across as having done any real in-depth research. This is the research I did for this article. Anyone listening could do the same. But as best I can tell, he had no, although he was on the track and field team at Carlisle, he was such a, you know, he participated, he played football, lacrosse, track and field, baseball. So you got to figure just how much time he spent in any one of them. And I'm like you, had he had time to, the opportunity just to focus on track and field, had he had the some of the technology and training ideas that we have in 2012, he probably would have been almost Superman, I would think.
In many ways, he was Superman.
He was. You know, something we brought out here that a high accolade for him was when they voted the greatest athlete. This was a group of Sports Illustrated writers. Mm-hmm. The greatest athlete of the 20th century, he was picked as the greatest athlete. And that was from a pool of athletes that included Muhammad Ali, Jack Nicklaus, Babe Ruth, and
Mickey Mantle.
Michael Jordan. You said Mickey Mantle. I didn't catch Mickey Mantle.
He's got to be in there.
Mick should have been in there.
Number seven has got to be in there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing about the Olympics, you look at Jim Thorpe and you look at Jesse Owens in their particular times that they competed in the Olympics. And if you remember when Jesse Owens, it was like Adolf Hitler was trying to show the world that the Germans were the superpowers.
Yeah, there it
wasn't just competition in sports. We are the superpowers. Jesse Owens just blew them away. Jim Thorpe blew them away in special times. And it's amazing what that did, I guess, for the confidence of our country and the level of respect that all the other countries gave to you. And you're watching it right now, and everybody is looking at probably our biggest competitor in the world, which would be China.
Right.
And right now, the United States has more medals than China and more golds than China has. And it's not just a get-together of everybody joined together in peace and harmony and competing against each other. There is a lot more involved in that.
There's some strong commerce at work.
Yes.
You better believe that. And I think you're right. The Olympics, just like professional sports, and some this, I guess this is sad to say, but maybe not also sad. You know, sports, you know, we go back to the time when Thorpe was doing it in the baseball days of Hannes Wagner and Ty Cobb. Those guys made a little money. They lived better than the average man, but it wasn't these mega contracts like mm-hmm. they have now. So there was a lot of spirit and passion to it. But now all sports, now including college sports to some degree, big high school, it's a business now.
Yeah, it is.
We got crowds paying money to see it. We're buying memorabilia, T-shirts, tennis shoes. We're buying concessions. You know, I remember a guy telling me they had an athletic shop at Knoxville. He said he'd cried ever since Peyton Manning left UT because he said he made more money while Peyton was there than he'd ever made in his life.
I'm still crying because he left UT.
Yeah. He said he couldn't keep Peyton jerseys, literally.
Yeah.
Could not keep them.
And that hasn't stopped because a lot of it is not the ability of the man solely, but also the character of the man.
I think
people are looking for that.
That's right. And Peyton was and still is a fine character.
He really is.
And the whole Manning family.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes all the way back to Archie and his wife. It really does. Now, Jim Thorpe, you would think, had the ideal life for someone. He had it tough growing up. He had it tough going through school. He reached the pinnacle of sports by winning the decathlon, winning the gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
He did all of those things. He was he had the physical ability to be at the top level of any sport he tried.
True enough.
But yet he ran into so many adversities after he completed the Olympics. It's unreal. It almost took him down.
Well, in 1913, and this was portrayed in the movie with Burt Lancaster, Jim Thorpe All-American, and I mentioned it in the article. It had been uncovered that a couple summers previously, he had played some minor league baseball, mm-hmm. and he'd been paid a paltry sum. You know, you read different accounts, and it gives different amounts, but I'm going to say safely somewhere around 50, no more than $100. And so he was stripped of his gold medals. And I think just common logic and progression tells you that that put him in a somewhat of a state of disappointment. I wouldn't say total despondency, but that's bound to smart quite a bit. However, he went on for the next 15 years and played baseball and football, and one year made the All-Pro team and was named to the All-Decades team. But after that, after 1928, his life seemed to have taken a little bit of a nosedive. And yes, he did suffer from, and again, this is portrayed in the movie, from financial destitution, and he had bouts with a bottle. And sort of, I think probably at the end there, sort of died destitute. And, you know, his wife, something I'd like to clear up here. This was a goodwill mistake, but I have that he is buried in the article I have that his wife, when he died, she wanted a monument made to him, somebody mm-hmm. to recognize him. And there was a lot of places, from what I understand, even in Oklahoma, that didn't really want him because, quote unquote, he'd sort of died under a cloak of disgrace. But she went around and finally found these two towns in Pennsylvania. Now, in the article, I have Mock in East Mock, Pennsylvania. That is incorrect. It is Machuck in East Machuck, Pennsylvania. So I'd like to correct that on there.
Was the editor when he was looking at that?
I don't know. I imagine I'll be called in on the carpet on that. A fella named Terry Krause called in, and he grew up there. Hmm. And I spoke with him on the way down here this morning. He straightened me out on that. But that's how I had it listed on the internet. But the correct is Machuck in East Machuck, Pennsylvania. And what Thorpes would have did, they took it. They agreed to take his body and bury it and build a monument to it. And the general consensus is there was hopes of bringing in tourism. Now, some of the family allege that she was trying to make some money off of it, but there's no proof that she ever received any money. And there's another train of thought that she was just trying to get him a respectful place for his name to be known throughout history. But anyway, as this article mentioned, his son, James Thorpe, I'm sure Jim Jr., there is a move, and I guess it's been in place for some time, but it just reared its head back up during the Olympics. He's trying to get his body moved to somewhere in Oklahoma so he can be buried alongside his relatives. And there's controversy there, and there could even be money involved there. So, you know, in my article, I brought out that, don't you find it convenient that they brought up the Jim Thorpe burial controversy during the Olympics? And did they do so to honor his legacy or merely to capitalize on the Olympics and garner headline grabbing space? But you know, if I was a reporter, I'd probably do the same thing. So I'm not really finding fault with them. I just want to let them know that it didn't slide by me. So anyway,
but why in this particular time do we put so much attention into the fact that somebody is trying to do something for their own particular good as far as monetary gain or whatever, when in a lot of times it's probably from the heart, say, this is where he really belongs. He belongs with us.
Well, I thank you. You know, the Indians are very sensitive about that.
Yes, they are.
And I don't want to comment too strongly on that because I don't know that much about the Indian culture, but I am, you know, why are the burials very sacred to them?
It is. I can tell you that.
And so, probably to really get a good feel on this, Truman, we would probably need to talk to some Native American Indians and probably some of Thorpe's family to really get a good feel. But I would think that the son probably is doing this from the heart.
Yeah, that's the way I feel. We got somebody on the line.
Okay.
Caller, welcome aboard with Mike Benson.
Thank you. You were talking about legends this morning, and you mentioned Jesse Owen.
Yes.
I had a chance in 1964 at a meeting in Cincinnati, Ohio, to spend about 2.5 hours with him, along with about 3 or 4 other guys, while he was waiting for a flight at the Cincinnati airport. And we asked him, of course, about the 1936 Olympics, and he kind of laughed and said, well, it's a good story. It just didn't happen. And we said, what do you mean? And he said, well, he said, Hitler did not have the opportunity to shake hands with me. He couldn't have refused. He said, the only people he shook hands with were the German athletes. And he said, I've tried to correct that story with journalists ever since. And he said, I finally gave up because they were interested in their story and not mine.
That's amazing, isn't it? How the things get out. But, you know, I have remembered that story ever since I was a young kid. And it's always fascinated me about everything that was involved during that particular time and what Jesse Owens himself meant to America.
Well, Jesse Owens was a class person, down to earth, very friendly, accommodating, and he had no reason to, you know, tell anything with a slant on it, especially to us three or four guys that were just sitting there drinking coffee. And I thought it was real interesting that he said, you know, they were just not interested in my story, and it kind of goes back to the Liberty Valance movie.
Yes.
You know, when the facts are not there, print the legend.
Exactly.
You know, talking about Jesse Owens, too, and talking about track and field records, the world record that Owens set in the 36 Olympics, I want to think that stood for about 25 years until Bob Beamon beat it.
I think you're right.
26 feet and so many inches, but it stood well over 20 years for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how fortunate it was for you to be with Jesse Owens at the time.
Well, I worked as sports information director at Western Kentucky University for 16 years and here at MTSU for almost that long. I met sports people all over the world, some big names, some not so big. But the only autograph that I have that I cherish is Jesse Owens.
Oh, my.
Well, that would be one to cherish for a lifetime.
Because it really transcended sports. It really did at that time.
Yes, and he was very successful after he could no longer run or do anything. He was a very intelligent man, and he knew how to get along with people.
Yeah, he took everything with class. He was not one of those people that demonstrated to call attention to himself or anything like that. He just went along his way, and it seemed like he did that his whole life.
That's exactly right.
Collar, have you ever revealed this story to MTSU long jump coach Dean Taylor?
Yes.
I'm sure he enjoyed it.
I'm sure he did. In fact, I know he did. But he was, you know, you can't. I worked with the media for a long time, and I have some opinions about that. I think we've gotten into an era since television came in where we have more entertainment than journalism, and that's their business, and there's no need my sticking my nose into it.
I think you made a good point there. Making a quote on Mr. Owens's quote that they were more interested in their story than his story, and I think that's a big part of the problem in today's 2012 journalism.
I think you're right.
But you know, I will listen to the Atlanta Brave baseball game. I'm still one of those that listen to the games because I love it better than watching it. And then I will get hurried in the morning to the newspaper box and get the paper out. Unfortunately, you guys are not out there every morning, which I wish you were. But I still want to look at all the box scores, and I still want to follow what happened. I don't know why. I guess it's just the kid in me. I can't get it out of me.
Well, some things stick with you, you know, for a lifetime.
Right.
Somebody asked me not long ago. I had on a St. Louis Cardinal cap, and they said, guy said, are you a Cardinal fan? I said, only since 1945. And he said, well, I'm a Cub fan. I said, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Yeah, you do have to have sympathy for them. So you remember Red Shane days before he went to New York Yankees?
What a lot of people don't remember about Shane days is that he learned to switch hit in Union City, Tennessee.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, they had a Class D team there called the Union City Greyhounds, and it was a Cardinal farm, and he was there for two or three weeks, and then they moved him out to another club.
I'm going to have to get you on my radio show.
Well, I don't know that it's worth that, but But I thought it would be interesting to share the Jesse Owens story while you were talking about the Olympics.
It's a great, great story. If you would leave your name somewhere with a radio station, I would appreciate that, because you would be a great guest here.
Gave it to Bart. I don't know whether he wrote it down or not, but he can call me. Ed Given is the name.
And, all right.
Anytime, I'll be glad to talk with him.
I appreciate it, Ed. Thank you very much.
Steven.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Mike Benson.
I'm Robert McConnell from Robert's Discount Auto Repair in Murfreesboro. What makes us different than other repair shops? We proudly employ Christian technicians. Our mechanics are honest, they do high-quality work, and they only recommend service and repairs that are truly needed for your car or truck. Give us a call at 896-1407 or just stop on by. Remember, at Roberts, we beat the dealership on service and price.
Roberts Discount Auto Repair on Broad, across from Ford of Murfreesboro.
Next is the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
Are you searching for a full-service, one-stop-shop contracting and construction team to repair your damaged residential or commercial roofing system? Fessler Home Improvement and Construction is a fully licensed and insured company with a solid rating from the Better Business Bureau, and we're here to help. Call us at 217-4907. We also specialize in water damage and remodeling. Call 217-4907 for a free, no-obligation inspection. Fessler Home Improvement and Construction, 217-4907.
Have you ever considered the role that companies play in the overall vitality of a community? Excellent companies realize they have a responsibility to give back to the communities where they do business. It could be serving on local boards or even making financial support available to charitable organizations. As you do business, think about the role your business plays in making a difference. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
If you want to get some barbecue, I tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
What you playing there?
One of my favorite games of all time.
What's that?
The new Monopoly Instant game from the Tennessee Lottery.
You mean like pass, go, and collect $200?
No, I mean like win instantly and collect $250,000.
With tickets starting at just $1, you could be an instant winner when you play the Monopoly family of games from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
Wow, you could buy some property with that.
Yeah, maybe even something on Tennessee Avenue.
Yeah.
Monopoly is a trademark of Hasbro and is used with permission.
And now for the million-dollar question. What would you do if you won $1,000,000? Not sure? Well, you could ask Matthew from Memphis, Kathy from Knoxville, Georgia from Jackson, Charles from Nashville, or any of the 91 million-dollar winners across the state. Because since its inception, the Tennessee Lottery has sold 91 tickets worth $1 million or more. And the numbers keep growing. So hurry out today to play the Tennessee Lottery. And millionaire number 92 just might be you.
Weather-eye. We have a chance for showers and storms wrapping up early today. Otherwise, partly sunny skies, highs in the mid-80s. We'll have a west wind between 5 and 10 miles per hour. I'm WGNS meteorologist Andy Thaluber. Right now, 79.
That update brought to you by Jack in the Box. All summer long at your local Jack in the Box, you can escape the heat and cool down with any large fountain drink for just $1 plus tax. This is at participating locations. That's Jack in the Box.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Mike Benson. We want to let you know that Sims Auctioneers David Gilliam and Larry Sims are inviting you to an absolute auction this Saturday at 10 a.m. on Richland Richardson Road, just off Old Woodbury Highway. Three tracks will be sold. Track one includes a 1,700 square foot four bedroom home with garage and shop on 7 acres. Tracks two and three are both 8.5 acres with perk sites on each. Personal property will also be sold, including some antique furniture, quilts, and glassware. Also, fine china, a bedroom suit, washer, dryer, chest freezer, and lots of lawn and garden tools. Check out LarrySims.com for more information on the absolute auction this Saturday at 10 a.m., and that's tomorrow. Tomorrow at 10 a.m. It's on Richland Richardson Road just off Old Woodbury Highway. Again, visit LarrySims.com for more information. You know, Mike, I think Bart and I may be going to breakfast over at Readable Mill in the morning. I think I'll stop by over there because I bet you can find some pretty good bargains.
I wouldn't want to bet against that.
Now, when you're looking for your particular subject, uh-huh, when you write, what really grabs in and trips your trigger?
That's a good question. People ask me that all the time.
Well, I shouldn't have asked it then. It's nothing new.
Well, okay. Actually, I try to keep some things on the back burner that I think could work at most any time, mm-hmm, who are not subjects that are not harnessed by time. Mm-hmm. And so I've always got that stored like in a back concavity in my cranium somewhere.
But you say in the cavity of your...
My cranial cavity. Yeah. In a dark recess there. What I like really doing, it's sort of fun for me. I like a little spontaneity. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll... Now, like this Jim Thorpe thing is a good, mm-hmm, example. I usually try to have the article roughed in by Monday, mm-hmm, because I have to meet Ron on Wednesday for coffee, and usually try to show him a rough draft, and of course they like for us to have them submitted by noon on Wednesday so Michelle can lay everything out. But it was either Monday or Tuesday, I can't remember the day, but I was surfing the net. I'd been involved in a state senatorial campaign, so I hadn't had that much time to watch television. Mm-hmm. So I was keeping up with the Olympics, a lot of it via the internet. And I came across, and I was looking for, as I said in the article, I was particularly interested in Michael Phelps and Usain Bolt, the Jamaican, mm-hmm, sprinter. And while surfing for their achievements, I came across this Jim Thorpe controversy. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's how that happened. That was a spur-of-the-moment thing. Then sometimes it might just be a comment someone says, or it might be a joke. It might be something somebody says that makes me laugh, or it might be something that someone says that completely hacks me off. Mm-hmm. But I have to feel that if it moves me in that way, it will move the reading audience, if in fact I can lay it out as such. Mm-hmm. So I sort of like those last minute things, not right deadline last minute, but up until a day or two before submission.
You know, during the last few weeks, and everybody in some way or another is a sports fan. I mean, they either like one of the major sports anyway. And I think that's one of the reasons I like the Olympics so much. It's so pure. But, you know, I think – and let's talk about journalism for, uh-huh, a while. And not just journalism. I guess that crosses the into radio and TV and everything else. Sports, they seem to analyze – the players and their conduct as much or more than what they do on the field anymore, especially if it relates to high-profile players like quarterbacks and running backs, split ends, things like that. And when they do things that I call trivial things, such as riding in a jet ski and causing havoc a little bit on the lake or whatever, they just won't let that die, and it crosses over into their ability to think and do the right thing on the football field or basketball court or whatever. Why have we got into that situation where it's constant negative things that they want to focus on rather on the positive things?
It's a new age of values, and there's no accountability, at least accountability the way you and I grew up knowing it.
Right.
If you were working for somebody like Ron Pryor 25 years ago and you came out with some of that outlandish stuff, your neck was in a noose, as it well should
have
been.
That's the times I remember well.
Yeah, and now it's just like it's a wild, wild west. The more hedonistic the more hurtful, the better. And they've gone much too far with mm-hmm. it. I remember reading, I was on the treadmill one day in the Civic Center of McMillan, and I was reading a sports magazine that had a take on Dallas superstar forward Dirk Nowitzki, mm-hmm. who's MVP and led them to the NBA
Great
championship.
Basketball player.
And he's a very much of a homebody, mm-hmm. and his teammates sort of kid him because he doesn't go out on the town with them. Here he is single, and you know, he like he says, his personal love life is his business. But he had come in contact with some girl who was down on her luck, and he'd really helped her out. And come to find out, she turned out to be a little bit of a swindle artist.
Mm-hmm.
But he had nothing he couldn't handle financially, and he sort of blew it off. But what the sports writers and the media were riding him about now, they didn't say, well, here he was a humanitarian. You know, he helped this girl, and he mm-hmm. had the means to do it. But they were dogging him because she wasn't real eye candy. She wasn't a real looker. You know, that was very superficial, I thought. You know, why didn't you applaud the man for trying to be a good neighbor? But that, again, that's 2000. That's where we're at now. It's not just sports. It's everything. You know, Ashley Judd, you know, I did a piece on that. They tore into her because her face looked a little puffy, and she wasn't 120 pounds. She was 130, and, you know, she tore back at them. She said, I will not be identified by my physical assets. Mm-hmm. And says, I will not lose my autonomy. And
good for her.
You better believe it. She tore into them well. And in fact, I sent her a hard copy of the Murfreesboro Post. I don't know if she received it, but I sent it to her agent in L.A., because she was a hero to me. But those people, that's afraid, those kind of characters, that quality of character, that's a fading frontier, Truman.
Well, you know, I love sport so much, but I love the sport itself. I love the purity of the sport, whichever one it is. I love baseball more because I played it so long and just absolutely wish I was 17 years old again. And you go through all that, and you got ESPN that just takes over the entire sports scene, and it has gotten so bad with me at the negative things that they keep saying. And it's not just them, but they seem to be the one that wants to get out and blast people so much. I was watching, I think it was last night, and I'm almost to the point where I'm just not going to quit watching it unless it's some special game or something event I've got. But there was one guy took it upon himself. It's one guy against the other when they talk about something. I can't remember what the name of the show is.
Is it Mike and Mike?
No. It's the one where you have one guy takes one side, another one takes the other.
Yeah.
And they asked each other questions, and they pick on each other all the time. But anyway, he had the audacity to say that the USA had favorable judging on the soccer match yesterday, and pretty much that Japan outplayed the USA in that soccer match. And I was livid because I watched the thing, and the referee could have gone either way on either side, but the USA was above a lot of those penalties because Japan wasn't scoring on those penalty kicks anyway. And he was saying that that Japan actually deserved to win that match. And I said, what was he watching? And he was adamant about it.
Well, my question to him would have been, had he ever refereed a soccer match, number one?
I'm sure he probably never saw one.
And if the answer is no, I'd say, well, then why would you even talk about it? I guess because you get paid well for it.
Yeah. Do you think a lot of times they do that just to get people's interest up and their blood boiling? But
I think I
was ready to send him to another country.
I think a lot of times they'll throw a little incorrect stuff in there just to spike the show, yeah. And that if you know, doing that is sort of like dismantling a bomb. You got to be very careful with it. You got to do that in very temperate amounts, mm-hmm. because most often it'll get out of control and it'll morph into its own reality far from the truth.
You know, I think a lot of times we make them a lot more than what they are. I think ESPN wallows in their power that they have over sports and the fans that are watching the sports. And they have a lot of power over the writers.
Because
the writers love to be on that show and have the nation watching them and listen to their opinions and things like that.
Yeah. They, you know, comparing ESPN, the journalism there, my dad left me a bunch of old Sports Illustrated magazines.
And I used to take them.
And, in fact, I've got one of the, it's got the, when the Cardinals won the World Series, what would have been, 1969? Or eight.
Yeah, it should be a remember because it was a real fluke that
year. Yeah, and you know, on the front of the, they've got them. It's sort of a, I think it's sort of a fashion thing, really, because mm-hmm. they've got like Bob Gibson, Tim mm-hmm. McCarver, and all those people. They're
nice
Kernighan sweaters, mm-hmm. and but you can read the stories they were writing back then. You talking about Mark Owen?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some really strong writing, and none of this way out there hyperbole. It was mm-hmm. just real. If I may say so, it was real meat and potatoes.
That's a great name for a column.
I've thought about that, yeah.
You think you'll ever use it?
I would imagine. Probably time and time again.
Do you see a time? I think newspapers the size of the Murfreesboro Post will be here forever. I think you got the Courier and all of those. And as you see big corporations buying out newspapers one after another. I don't know what the purpose is, but they never...
Greed.
They're That's not making the any money.
Yeah, you wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, so you wonder, why in the world? Because I remember when it used to happen that it was a power struggle. The more newspapers you owned, the more influence you had over a lot of different things.
Politics, a little bit.
Yeah.
You sort of, well, you know, bringing up a little bit of a dark factor here, you go back to Hitler's strategy in World War II, you know, his minister of propaganda, mm-hmm. Goebbels, told him, said, if you'll take control of the media, you can pull this off. And so we sort of maybe align that with what you just said, you know, control of the media is power. That's for sure.
And that's because we allow it to happen.
Right. But I think with the Post, again, I'm biased, but as far as a newspaper that has a little something for someone that is laid out with pristine expertise, has got a good eclectic mix of writers, each one of them has something to say.
They're all unique in their own way.
I think so. And I think that it probably, again, and I'm obviously biased, but I think it's probably the best newspaper in Middle Tennessee.
You look at the names that are in there, in the Murfreesboro Post, they have all been successful in other medias, in other papers.
Right.
And it goes all the way across the board. It could be politics. It could be community affairs, sports. You name it, and it's a great collection of minds there.
It really is. I've told Ron, you know, I'll be surfing the net doing some research, and you know, you might come across your name, my name, Whittle's name, Woody's name, whoever, be on some blog. You know, I found some stuff on the Wall Street Journal one time.
Mm.
You know, and this was about Martin Luther King, but I thought, how in the heck did my name end up on a Wall Street Journal blog? But there it was.
Do you have much opportunity to leave this area and go hunt down special interviews that may be really close to what you really would like to do?
Yeah, I haven't in years now. I used to really go at that hard, but back when I was working with Jerry Ray, James Earl's brother, and I was really, as far as the spec script and stuff like that, really doing the rudiments of that. He and I took some very interesting trips, many trips mm-hmm. to Memphis. And we took one up to Petros, Tennessee one time, sort of incognito, and I won't go into the specifics on there, but I'll just say it was legendary, and sometime I'll tell you about it in private.
Okay. So it's not anything you're going to write a book about or anything like
Probably
that?
Probably not. But it was, it could be considered borderline nefarious by some, but it was great fun for me.
Is that the best interview you ever had?
That one and Lonnie Mack, the blues rock guitarist. James is with James, you know, it was a good interview, and there was a lot of hype around it, but it was had such historical significance. You know, as we've talked on this very show, along with the Kennedy assassination, the Martin Luther King assassination is considered the most pivotal event of 20th century American history, and some feel that it has even more significance than the JFK assassination simply because of the race factor in the civil rights. It probably doesn't get hardly as much hype as JFK, but it's not far behind. But yeah, I would say as far as clout and historical worthiness, it probably is. But Lonnie's was right there. Lonnie actually gave me my first big break on an interview. In fact, Ron ran that in the News Journal, Daily News Journal, when he had those Sunday inserts.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran it for three consecutive issues.
Wow.
On Sunday. And it was a big old, I rambled on that one. But with Lonnie, it was just like a Grateful Dead jam session. Mm-hmm. You just had to hook in and go.
Well, you know, of all the events, and you were mentioning the Kennedy assassination in 63,
mm-hmm.
I still remember a lot of things vividly. And I always thought what it would be like to be an investigative reporter that worked on that, because you had so many agencies involved, so many people from the media involved. There were cameras there at the event when it happened, and everything was brought into play. All the emotions and the factual things that you saw that were on hand. But there has never been anything that I can remember that had so many different aspects of that particular assassination that nobody seems to have a grasp on. I mean, it was right there in front of everybody. I know you have events happen in front of you time from time, and even you get confused as you're watching it. But after all these years of compiling the data that are factual, the things that you have seen, you can't get an agreement with all those experts on actually what did happen.
And you're right. That that's where it gets discombobulated. And that's very tough for a researcher, investigator. I know with the King thing, my starting point was Jerry Ray, James Earl's brother. And Jerry's got a criminal background, and a lot of people would try to discredit Jerry. But I can tell you this on live radio. Yale professors, Memphis investigators, prosecutors, you need to listen to this. Everything that Jerry Ray has told me about his brother, I have researched to the nines year after year. I've even tried to trip him up. Everything he's ever told me panned out.
That's amazing.
So I used that as a template.
Mm-hmm.
And I started branching out. And what I tried to do, really, is seek out people who I felt had some knowledge and would be objective, wouldn't be slanted. And again, I realize Memphis prosecutors and detectives have a job to do, and I don't expect them to jump on board with me. Mm-hmm. But I just sort of sidestepped those people and tried to go to people maybe who were ex in those positions and who were willing to talk now. And so thus the many trips to Memphis. I've spent some time in Memphis with some interesting people behind closed doors.
How are you able to assimilate fact from fiction with those? Because, you know, you'll run into some people that may actually believe some of the things that they're telling you, but they may not be quite accurate. And then you have those that are...
Okay, I'll give you an example of something I uncovered here lately. This is jumping around a little bit, but this should give you a good idea. When James, he was in a 1966 Mustang, and that was seen around the scene of the King assassination in Memphis, and they found it in Atlanta, parked at Capitol Homes housing projects on April the 11th, about a week after the assassination. And there were two FBI agents who. The local Atlanta police called the two FBI agents because they felt it crossed state lines. And this one agent, Don Wilson, he's written about this. he left the agency right after that. He said that the ashtray was overflowing with cigarette ashes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, James Earl didn't smoke. Thus, this would indicate that there was a second person in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was the... I've got a Department of Justice document that really decries Wilson, said he didn't know what he was talking about. He was lying. Well, then I got the original transcript from James Earl Ray's original trial, which was March 10th, 1969. Guess what Memphis prosecutors entered as evidence from the car? A box of ashes. So that's how you come to fact.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Mike.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
FM 100.5, FM 101.9, AM 1450.
Join us for the Rutherford County High School Football Jamboree tonight, right after Sports Night with George Plaster here on WGNS.
Southern Community Bank, unlike all the rest. Beverly Barker, branch manager.
Southern Community Bank is a strong, independent community partner with a simple philosophy. Keep banking hassle-free for people who just want to be treated well.
We're unlike all the rest.
WGNS, Murfreesboro. It's 10 o'clock. Now, from the voice of Rutherford County, local news, fast, first, now.
Are you 10 pounds overweight, 30, more? Those extra pounds are hurting the quality of your life, your relationships, and your health. Dynamic Medical Centers offers fast, effective, medically supervised weight loss programs. Patients routinely lose up to 30 pounds in their first 30 days, and our programs are easy to follow with no hunger, no surgery, and no trips to the gym. For a free weight loss consultation, call 455-0850, dynamicmedicalcenters.com.
Next, it's the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
Roto-Rooter Plumbers of Rutherford, Cannon, Bedford, Warren Counties is a full-service plumbing and drain cleaning company providing residential, commercial, and industrial services. There are no trip charges, no contracts, or clubs to join. Roto-Rooter technicians are trained to serve, not to sell. Roto-Rooter, 890-3905, an individually owned franchise by George Weiss and Mike Watson.
Call Roto-Rooter, that's the name.
And legal troubles.
890-3905.
Remember the saying, you can bank on it? They were trying to gain your trust. Customer trust is more important today than ever before. And businesses who are in tune with the needs of their customers understand the right balance between high-tech and high-touch services. Meeting customer expectations and doing it with respect is the ultimate test of better business. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
We're here with Dr. Rishi Saxena, this area's only physician certified in heart CT.
We were one of the earliest to start, and we started doing it before most of the hospital in Nashville.
And while others have acquired it, only Dr. Saxena knows how to use the information.
They don't have people to read it, or they have no experience in dealing with it.
Call 896-4800 to also schedule a test with Dr. Saxena to detect calcium deposits in arteries. It's only $60. No insurance claims will be filed.
You are listening to The Truman Show on WGNS, AM and FM. Now, back to Truman Jones.
And we want to let you know this last part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care, it is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means that Home Care is hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care, they provide top-quality professional caregiving service throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. And when you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care, it is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639 and online at homecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639 At Home Care, your number one source for the best care in Middle Tennessee. You know, when you get on, when you're on the show with me, Mike, we can almost go in any direction at any time.
And
that's the one thing that I like best, because you have a great way of saying things to people on the radio the way that you put it on paper. And that's a gift, because when you're writing things down on paper, it seems like it's more of a personal thing. But when you're on the air, it's personal, but it's directly to someone while you're giving the either the sources or the events that we were talking about at the time.
Well, I think it's always good, whether it be via radio or writing, it's good to try to make the audience feel personally involved.
Now, let's take out James Earl Ray and let's take out the Kennedy assassination.
Okay.
If you had your choice of any direction or any particular story that has always been in your mind that you would like to focus on and bring it to the attention of everybody, is there one in particular that stands out?
You mean if I had the ability to go after any story I wanted, minus those two mentioned? That's a good question. I will say this, things that I tend to repeat. Civil rights in general, because I came to know about civil rights in studying about the King assassination, but aside from the King assassination, James Earl Ray, civil rights have an interest.
Well, we grew up in that time.
I have a great interest in sports, and I have a great interest in rock blues music. You know, I think of things, these are going to seem a little abstract, but I go back to things that really affected me in sports as a kid. Brooks Robinson's glove on third base mesmerized me. Joe Namath's guarantee of the 69 Super Bowl.
That still makes me sick.
And then probably one of my favorite sports moments was the basketball duel between Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell.
Oh, unreal.
It's two men going after it. And then in music, you know, my friend Lonnie Mack, and then particularly so Stevie Ray Vaughan. Mm-hmm. You know, any of those opportunities would be great moments for me. I think I could be a part of that with a good heart and a big interest, and hopefully I could do it right. And I'll have to say this too. There's a show I like on television. I hope this isn't betraying any of my own inner soul, but, you know, criminal masterminds, those fellas intrigue me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about the low-level crooks, but I'm talking about the true masterminds, because there's something very colorful about them. I know that we don't need those kind of people, but I think we're all a little bit fascinated by them.
Well, that was mentioned. Bill Curtis does a lot of that, and you know Bill Curtis.
He does a good job, too.
Yeah, he was young when he first started. I guess it was CBS, first started with. And he goes back and researches all of that, kind of like you do. And, of course, he's got old films. He has films of things that were so gruesome to us at the time. And you sit back and look at these people that have minds that have to be totally out of kilter all the time.
No matter what their IQ is.
Right. And they bring that up, and I am like you. I am fascinated by watching how these crimes begin, how the criminals begin in their life to become what they are, and it could be an individual thing, or it could be a mob thing, or whatever. But the whole concept is just absolutely fascinating, and it's a I don't know what it speaks of us to have such a morbid way of looking at things.
I remember a book I read when I was in high school. It was an assignment, and it's a great book about crime, but it was based on a true story, Truman Capote's In Cold Blood.
Oh, that's a terrible one. Yeah.
And, boy, I remember that just gripped me. Mm-hmm. I can remember when I started reading it. Again, it was a mandatory assignment. But once I got into it, I remember using a flashlight in the bedroom to read it into the wee hours.
Robert Blake was never the same after he played that part.
He sure was. Boy, he did it. He did a stellar job on it. He's sort of like Heath Ledger's character in Batman, the Joker. He went really deep into it.
Yeah, and then, of course, we know what happened to Keith Ledger right after that.
Yeah, sad thing.
Yeah. Well, great show, Mike.
Thank you, Truman.
We'll have to have you back on because I know we have a lot of subjects that we can discuss.
The only thing we need, Fryer and Whittle here next time to make it complete.
You think that would make it complete?
Well, there'd be more bodies in here, that's for sure.
We'll see you guys Monday morning at 9 o'clock. Have a great weekend.